We haven't done a show together in a while.
It's been a while.
It has been.
You're listening to JD and Tammy Rucker as we deliver the NOQ report, or as we like to call it, the NOQ report. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and enjoy.
All right. I do believe we are live. Call this an emergency episode, an episode that we had to rush to get out there. This is an important one, one that needs to be pushed. I'm going to go ahead and do one quick tweet, and then we will get started with our special guest today. So let me pop this one. I just want to make sure that the pertinent people are there.
Okay, so I'm about to explain this.
Yep, here we go. So today we are very pleased and extremely excited to have Ivan Raiklin, a constitutional scholar, a man who has put together a plan to basically to save this nation. I mean, there's no other way to put it. This is a plan that if it goes through, there are many pieces to it. I'll link to it in the show notes, so you'll be able to read it directly. But I wanted to get him on to explain it because the plan technically has already started, and the crucial moving parts are actually going to be moving, starting to move as of tomorrow, hopefully, with the Supreme Court taking over. Ivan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. So thanks for having me on. You want me to just jump in and explain, tell a little about myself? And I guess how I bring credibility to this conversation, and then we'll jump into the plan.
Brother, it is your show now. I am just here listening and paying very close attention.
Okay, excellent. So my name is Ivan Raiklin. On Twitter, I am at Raiklin, spelled R-A-I-K-L-I-N. And what I decided to do I'm an attorney. I'm registered barred in, we call it barred in New York, meaning that I'm an attorney in New York, but I've also been looking at constitutional issues for the last, let's see, when did I become an attorney? 2005. So we're looking at 15 years. And I really look at constitutional issues. And because of that experience, as well as my experience for 17 years in the National Guard of four different states, you get to learn a lot as an officer in those different states of the play of federalism as you're working in those ranks, as well as being an attorney. So using that as context and having sworn to take an oath to defend the Constitution in my military capacity, right? I'm in the reserves, but in no way, shape, or form is this discussion any way related to my affiliation with the Department of Defense. This is in my personal capacity as a constitutional lawyer, and I'm going to go through the timeline of how the Constitution, so there's really several binding principles on how this plan is going to operate. There's three, actually. So the first piece is, this is bound by the United States Constitution that we need to defend. That's number one. I'll go into the specific components of it. Number two is Title III of the United States Code that outlines, it's also known as the Electoral College Voting Act. And it's codified in Title III of the United States Code. And there's certain sections that will go into detail that specify this timeline on electing a president and a vice president. And then the last component, which is equally important, is we the people. So we the people are the ones that ensure that the other two are followed. And that's why I'm doing this, because I'm watching the news and they're not following this, our obligation as United States citizens. And those obligations are first and foremost to the United States Constitution. And then after that, our United States laws. And so that's why we the people is the most important component. Actually, it's equally, but I think it's the most important component. Now, using that as a backdrop, I'm going to kind of go down the list of what we're looking at. So holistically speaking, right now we're in December 7th, right? If I'm not mistaken.
It is.
This election started in some of these states that did absentee ballots way before November 3rd. But it started, you know, let's use November 3rd as that pivot point. It really started on November 3rd, and it will complete most likely, I would say almost, I'm almost certain that it will end by January 6th. And people are like, whoa, whoa, what's going on? That's why I'm here to explain exactly how this works. The Constitution sets out how an election occurs. It starts with the people on November 3rd, and it actually is certified, sealed, certified, and finished most likely on January 6th. Okay, now, that's kind of the time frame. We're a month out. December 7th, January 6th, 30 days away, because December has 31 days. So we're 30 days away from actually knowing potentially who the next president will be, whether it's going to be 4 more years for President Trump, which, based on my analysis, he has a minimum of 4 paths to victory, or will it be Vice President Joe Biden, who only has 1 path to victory? Now, let's start out with the easy one, the one path for Joe Biden to win. The only way that I see, based on my analysis in this timeline, of Joe Biden winning is if Donald J. Trump concedes this election. That is the only way that Joe Biden wins, okay? Now, let's go into the 4 paths to victory for the current president. So, we have different lawsuits that are going on. Tomorrow's going to be a big day, as you mentioned earlier. The Supreme Court is set a deadline, Justice Alito, in a case that's coming from Pennsylvania to determine whether or not the state violated not only its own constitution, but specifically federal constitution on the way it administered its election. I'm not here to go into detail on all these different cases. You can go to what Sidney Powell is doing with Lynn Wood on, what is it, defendingtherepublic.org to get specifics on those cases. You can go to and follow what Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis are doing. All these people are doing amazing, important. They're at the tip of the spear. I mean, they're at the tip of the actual fight on the battlefield in the courtrooms doing all this. I'll leave it to those professionals to kind of get into the details of what they're doing. I'm giving the holistic overview. All right, so you have different things going on. So of the 5 states, there's 6 total states that are contested for a total of 79 contested electoral votes. So currently we have 232 for Trump that are uncontested and 227 that are not contested for Biden, which gives President Trump the lead right now in 79 contested. So those 79, what do they look like? Georgia, Wisconsin, Arizona, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Nevada. I call it the Guam instead of the Swamp. And the reason why I leave out Nevada, you'll see why. Okay, let's see here. The Guam is patched together, particularly because the state legislatures, and this is going to get important as we kind of go through this, the state legislatures are majority Republican in the House and Senate, whereas in Nevada, they're majority Democrat. Okay, so the people voted on November 3rd, December 8th tomorrow is the first date under Title III of the U.S. Code that states that the states need to do something as it applies to their election. So what is that something that they need to do? That's something they need to do is they need to elect their slate of electors. So how it works is months before this election on November 3rd, each state decides by party. So the Republicans choose, in the instance of Pennsylvania, 20 Republicans that will represent the state of Pennsylvania to the federal Congress on whether or not they're going to vote for someone. Well, the Republican slate obviously is going to vote for President Trump because and Vice President Pence because they're Republicans. And then there's a Democratic slate ready to go, right? So 20 and 20. And then the election by state law determines whether or not who gets sent. But if there's a dispute, we got to figure out how this is going to play out. So December 8th, tomorrow, some state, the uncontested states, I would imagine all of them are going to select their respective Republican or Democrat slate of electors. Next, what if there's a dispute? We shall see. The legislatures under the Constitution have full authority without the governor having to call a special session. So if you're listening and you know anybody in the state legislature of Georgia, Wisconsin, Arizona, Michigan, or Pennsylvania, educate them and tell them they do not need the permission of their governor to sit for a special session. And they're going to say, well, our constitution in Georgia says that that's the case. Or our constitution in Pennsylvania says that we have to do that. Wrong. Well, that's right. But there's something known as a little document known as the United States Constitution, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2, that specifically states that when the Constitution was created, we the people and the states back then granted the federal government the authority to specifically grant the state legislature of all 50 states at this point anyway to vote, or excuse me, to decide on who they're going to elect for their electors. The legislature solely has that authority. The governor has no play in it. Zero. So if it says that in their constitution, that applies to every other type of special session. It does not apply to a special session that specifically has to deal with selecting the electors for the for the Electoral College, for the president and the vice president. Again, let me just recap that. It's very important. The U.S. federal constitution says that only the legislature and only the legislature of these states is responsible for selecting the presidential electors from that state. So in Arizona, Mayor Giuliani, looks like he's doing well. Hopefully he's going to recover really, really quickly from the China plague. Arizona called off their legislature. Interesting. I don't know why. But they have full authority to call a legislative session, special, whatever you want to call it, under the constitutional authority of the federal government, federal constitution, to determine whether or not they're going to certify their election. And that applies to all the different states. All right, so December 8th. December 14th is when the actual electors sit down. Well, they don't have to sit, but they actually vote on that day. And then the governor of that state certifies it. So if you've been following my Twitter way back a month ago, people were asking, why are you including governors and the political party of the governor and the legislature in your analysis? Well, because now we're getting into the following Monday on the 14th, we're going to get to the point where the governor technically may not certify. So say if it's a Democratic governor, he may not certify what the Republican legislature decides. Or he may decide to send the slate of electors that are set based on the fraudulent popular vote. And then the legislature decides to send a what they deem to be the accurate legal vote that goes for another the other candidate. So that happens on the 14th. Now, what if there's still a contest going on? Well, again, the 8th and the 14th, those dates are enshrined in the Title 3 of the U.S. Code, so not the Constitution. And then on December 23rd, another critical date. You still follow me? Or did you drop?
No, I'm here. I just muted so that you didn't hear the kids in the background. No, I'm totally following you. And one quick question. I don't want to take you off your groove. You're about to explain what happens next. But there was a question in the chat on Facebook through Matthew Brown. He says, is it true that Safe Harbor, which is technically tomorrow, the Safe Harbor date of December 8th is not in the Constitution relative to Act 77, which is the case that's hopefully going to be argued by Senator Ted Cruz.
No, it's a good question. Good to stop me there.
Yeah. So, is that why Judge Alito extended it? That's the full question from Matthew Brown.
Excellent question. My analysis is that is most likely why he did it. I mean, I don't know. I don't talk to him. I don't talk to any of the Supreme Court justices. But based on reading and the analysis that obviously you've been doing as well alongside with what I'm doing, is he probably saw it and did a little bit of research and preparation and thought, you know what, probably need to get ahead of this at least by a few hours. So tomorrow's the deadline technically, And if his ruling occurs, so the deadline is tomorrow, he's going to read the brief. 9 o'clock is the deadline, so he's going to have all day to read it, review it, and then to write up a response brief. I would imagine that tomorrow afternoon into tomorrow evening, at the latest, we're probably going to hear from Justice Alito on how we're going to proceed. And that case is, in my opinion, massive, because what happens in Pennsylvania with that case, because it has the constitutional implications, I don't think it's only going to apply to Pennsylvania. It could potentially have 50 state impact, depending on how the opinion is written, in terms of how the states process the mail-in ballots. So they may tailor it just to Pennsylvania, but they also may tailor it to where it applies to all 50 states. So stay tuned. I don't know how that's going to play out, but I think it's favorable. All indications that I'm seeing is it's going to be a favorable opinion if you're a Trump supporter, right?
One more quick question before you move on. If it's not, okay, let's say Pennsylvania, they file their response 9 a.m., around 2 p.m. tomorrow, Justice Alito comes on, he gives his response and he says, whatever, you guys filed too late, you should have filed before, which is essentially what the state Supreme Court said, or he says, hey, we're not going to get involved because this is a state issue. If it's not a positive ruling, does that derail President Trump's chances based on the plan that you've outlined?
I don't think so. So let me just back up. Short answer is I don't think so on two components. First, I don't think that's what's going to happen, what you're saying.
I agree. I don't think it is either, but just in case.
Two, if it does happen, hypothetically, I don't think so, because there are more issues going on in each of these states than just, there's the legislative component. There's the legal component where we go into state court and then into the Supreme Court. And I can go into that. I can bring up a map as well. I think maybe on my Twitter, if you want to go to my Twitter, I think I may have put it out there. But the makeup of the Supreme Courts, and if they're based on a split of the conservative and the liberal judges, Pennsylvania, out of all of the six states, is the only state that is a liberal-leaning court. So that's why in Pennsylvania, if you're representing the president, you have to go to the Supreme Court, right?
Right.
As we've seen from all of the cases that have been dismissed at the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania have been 5-2 rulings. Look at my little tweet. What's the makeup of the composition of that Pennsylvania Supreme Court? What do you think?
5-2 for sure.
And Mark Levin articulated it yesterday, I think, in his broadcast yesterday. In 2019, there were three elections. There were three conservative judges. Liberal judges took over, and so the Supreme Court flipped from a conservative leaning court to a liberal leaning court. Absolutely. All right. So to answer kind of even more the safe harbor piece,
That satisfied me. Keep going.
Background, so.
Oh, you're fine. I'm hiding all mine there in the closet right now.
So again, going back to Title III, again, I beg everyone that's listening, do your own research, fact check me 100%. If I'm wrong, just slam it in my face. I haven't gotten any of that, but I want you to fact check me. I want you to tell me I'm completely wrong and then destroy me with your argument with the supporting evidence. But with that said, so Title III, U.S. Code, and the constitutional section that I mentioned. So in Title III, we go into, let me bring this back up. We'll use my little cheat sheet. December 8th, we talked about December 14th, December 23rd. Why is December 23rd important? Well, December 23rd is important because in Title III U.S. Code, Section 15, it states that if for some reason the state does not submit its electoral slate of electoral votes to the president of the Senate, which is the vice president, so Vice President Pence in his capacity as the president of the Senate, again, this is constitutional, He then sends a letter demanding that that state send a slate of electors. So what does that mean? It stipulates that December 20, it envisions that the 8th and the 14th aren't really hard dates. So, and then what does that mean? He demands on the 23rd, well, then how much time does really the state have to respond to that request? People argue that January 6th, when the electoral vote happens, because that's what the Constitution stipulates, right? All right, mm-hmm. So what happens in the interim from today until the 23rd? Obviously, we talked about the legislative piece. Grassroots, everybody needs to reach out to your legislators and let them know the authority that I just mentioned. They have it full. They don't need the governor. Like, close your ears. The people need to push their legislators to say, you know what? All you're doing is shirking your duties. Make a decision. You don't need the governor to call you in the session. One legislator in he's a state senator in Pennsylvania. He took a bold lead in it, Mastriano. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to tag him in the tweet when you put it out.
Yep.
Took bold, decisive action, but he's not the state. He's not the president of their Senate. He's not the Speaker of the House. So people need to reach out to these speakers of the House, state presidents, or whoever the top person is in each of their legislative branches, and demand it. They have the full power to make the decision. And their options are as follows. They can either certify a fraudulent election. They can refuse to certify anyone because of all of the shenanigans that are going on. That's a safe political move. Let it play out, especially, for tomorrow, right? Since it's kind of a deadline according to federal law. And say, you know what? We're not going to submit our electors right now because we're still trying to figure this thing out. And then the last piece is that they can say, you know what? And I didn't hear all the hearings. They're the ones that heard all the hearings that were going on that with all the, the witnesses that were brought forward by Giuliani, Jenna Ellis. They heard all of it. They saw the documentary evidence. I didn't see all of that. They're in a position to articulate to their constituents and say, you know what? By way more than the preponderance of the evidence, we were able to see from the president's attorney that there are more votes that were fraudulent that he needed to win by. And we're going to certify the Republican slate of electors. So those are their three options. And there's technically a fourth option where they can set it up so that the electors are sent to the Congress, but they're mandated to abstain. Okay? That's also, theoretically, that's a possibility. Because you're going to ask the question, what's the difference of not sending them and sending them and abstaining? There is a difference. I'll tell you. It changes the denominator on how many electors were selected to then determine who gets the majority. So right now, if all states send everything and then the DC sends their three delegates, it's 538, requiring 270 for a majority. If Pennsylvania, as indicated by a good portion of the legislature, saying that do not accept what we're going to send you, if they decide to, you know what, they have a hearing, we're not going to send our 20 votes. What does that do? The denominator changes, and now you need to get 260 electoral votes for the win, because of the 20 lost. That's the dynamic that occurs in that instance.
So okay. Let me hop in there real quick, because number one, you said a whole lot, and I think we need to do a quick recap, especially for those who have come late. Number two, you are a constitutional scholar. I am not, but I want to repeat back essentially what you said to me in a very concise manner to make sure that, that we're all getting this. So first and foremost, to recap, this is Ivan. Ivan is a constitutional scholar. You can find him. What's your Twitter account? RAIKLIN.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Ivan Raiklin. He has put together a plan. You can find it on his Twitter account. This is a very long plan. It does include everyone. It includes the Supreme Court, obviously. It includes the legislature. It includes state legislatures, and it does include the people, because this is going to be a grassroots effort. We all do need to get involved. Okay, this is not something where it's like, I know a lot of times we're sitting there, well, the vote's already happened. We have nothing else that we can do. I guess we just have to sit and wait and hope for the best. Number one, no, you can do.
That is close.
You I mean, can do a lot.
We're 30 days out from this thing.
We are still 30 days out. And that's the other thing that I keep telling people. You know, people were asking me, I think it was either yesterday's show or the day before that, you know, hey, is this the final week? No, guys, we're at about halftime. Okay, the election was a little over a month ago. We got about a month left. You know, if things are not settled within a month, then, you know, then we're in big trouble. But we still have a month to go. So one of the things that I think needs to be very clear here is that, you know, what you just described, we'll start from the back and work our way forward. You were talking about the denominator. The Constitution says that you need half plus one of the electors in order to be elected to president and vice president. Okay. If nobody gets more than half, then it goes to the House and to the Senate. That's a whole other discussion, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, but it's important that he mentioned, you know, this isn't a matter of, you know, one of the options is that Pennsylvania could just say, we're not going to send any electors, but that brings it down to 518 total electors, which means that you only need to get 260 to have the majority. And then, guys, understand this, because if we, you know, the safest move, and that if they can get three states to do this, you know, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Michigan, we'll say, just hypothetically, though, it could be Arizona, could be Nevada, could be Wisconsin. You know, there are options. But let's say they get those three states to just send their delegates, but the delegates are not going to vote. They're going to abstain. That still keeps the magic number at 270 to reach to be half of 538.
There you go.
At which point it's a null and void election. It gets sent over to Capitol Hill, the Congress, and people are saying, oh my gosh, I don't want the Congress. You know, Nancy Pelosi's in charge of the House. Why do I want that? It's one vote per state. We have 30 states that are controlled by Republicans, 19 states that are controlled by Democrats, and you've got Pennsylvania, which is split. Ironically, Pennsylvania is split.
Actually, I don't think your numbers are correct. You have to use the – I'm not going to give the exact – because there's still three seats that are up for grabs. I still have to do my full analysis.
We've got 26 for sure.
But it's – yeah.
Yeah, Republicans have 26. Based on my projections, it's going to be 30. And but anyway, but yes, we have 26.
Let's just say we have the majority.
So. We do have the majority. So one way or the other, a majority of state delegations are controlled by Republicans, which means that, and they select the president, and then of course the Senate, which would be ironic if it's technically possible that we could. You could see some weird shenanigans, and you could have a Trump-Harris administration. But
I'll explain.
We'll get there. I know they've got us. I know what you're going to say, and we'll get to that one. But I just want to make one more quick point, okay?
Sure.
And this one, I think is very important. And you know what? I actually might even just save that one. You're probably going to cover it, so I'm going to not steal any of your thunder. I'm going to save. To let you continue from here, because there is one very important point that we have to discuss. But I think that pretty much recaps. Let me do a quick check for any big pressing questions in the chat. There's a lot of chatter out there, but so far only a couple of questions, and I think you've covered most of them. There's one question. Okay, so Deanna, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Nace on Periscope says, you're talking about calling legislators and stuff like that. She says, you mean only if you live in a Republican state? Who should I call? I live in Oregon. What should somebody like Deanna in Oregon call?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I get that question from quite a few people. You know, I have open DMs, so ask away, do your thing. It doesn't matter. Flood their phones, flood their emails. Let them know that they need to make the right call, right? So the more people that are reaching out to them, the more it floods them. They see the demand signal that we, the people, need for them to make the right call. Because at the end of the day, I get it. You don't live in that state. But that state has an impact on you. What state is she from?
Oregon.
Deanna. So, Deanna, these electors, while they're representing their own state, whoever they decide could potentially have, you know, it'll be determinative of who the president is. And the president has an impact on their whole country. So, please reach out to them. If they ask you where you're from, Tell them I'm a U.S. citizen.
Exactly.
And this is what I want.
Well, I'm going to go. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The Constitution, and I want to educate you on the Constitution, and I want you to execute based on the Constitution.
I'm sorry. One final thing, and then you take it from here and lay out the rest of the plan. I just want to note, because this is so important, especially if you read Federal 68, you'll understand that one of the reasons
obviously I'm talking to someone that did his research. I respect.
Oh, I've been thank you. I've been all over this for a while. As Josh says, I'm a loon. This is the guy who was out there telling people Trump could win California. I did, and I did say that it was definitely possible. But we'll discuss that later. Yes, I am a loon. But anyway,
remember, I said there are four paths to victory. I won't go into the fifth one. That one would be after January 6th. I don't want to talk about that one.
Let's get it all wrapped up as quickly as possible, and then we'll deal with the worst case scenario later. But I want everybody to understand the whole reason that the founders were brilliantly put this in the hands, the selection of the electors in the hands of the legislature, was because they felt specifically, they felt that this was the legislative body and the people who were going to be closest to we the people, that we would be able to, as citizens, American citizens, we would be able to influence, if we're in Pennsylvania, we could influence our Pennsylvania state legislators more than we could influence anyone else. And they wanted that close connection between the people, because they didn't want a majority rule. They didn't want a pure democracy. They saw the fallacies there, but they also saw the efficacy of making sure the people had a direct connection to select the electors. So,
we can go an hour or so and talk about the constitutional framework of how we got to that, the philosophical component. But then that would mean that we talk about Federalist Papers. Actually, we go before that. We talk about the Articles of Confederation, right. And then we move to Federalist Papers, which argue why we need to give some powers. Real quick, I will say this. We have God-given rights. There's no government. Then we create a government. We create a government of 13 colonies. And then those 13 colonies create legislatures. They are the 13 sovereigns on this territory, in this land, one of which I'm in, Virginia, one of the older ones. And so it didn't really work, because you had outside forces trying to come in and break things up and influence what are going on in the 13 colonies. And that's when they decide, you know what, these Articles of Confederation, which are treaties between the 13 colonies, it's just not enough. We're going to grant some of our power from the state to the federal government. And those powers are listed in the Constitution. If it's not listed, the federal government has zero authority on it. It stays with the state. With that framework, let's move on. Please. December 23rd, Vice President Pence. Hey, Arizona, send me your electors. What are you doing? I'm waiting on them. They need to come in so we can tally this thing up. Arizona says, I don't know. We're still trying to figure things out. We're still trying to figure out if the governor is supposed to call a special session. Oh, the governor says, I don't have the authority. But then the legislature says, yeah, you do. And the governor says, I don't. And they try to delay and delay and delay. That's all they're trying to do. We the people inject into that, forces it. Maybe Trump picks up one state. Maybe he picks up two. Maybe he picks up three. And that seals the deal. And that means we went on path one. All right, let's assume that path one doesn't happen. How do we win on path two? We kind of keep an eye on what the Supreme Court does. Right? That's path two. Path three is go down. December 18th. What happens on December 18th? Do you read my timeline yet? December 18th. There was an executive order that was signed by the president in September of 2018. What is that executive order? It says, the Director of National Intelligence needs to file an intelligence assessment on foreign meddling in United States elections. What does it specifically say he has to do? It says, by 45 days after the election, so November 3rd, 45 days, December 18th, the DNI has to submit to, listen carefully, the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, has to submit to the president, the secretary of state, the secretary of treasury, and the secretary of defense. And later on, there's a reference to the secretary of homeland security, his assessment on foreign interference. Who did we see yesterday on the Sunday talk show? The director of national intelligence. Who did we see a couple days or day before that or 2 days before that with, I think, Catherine Herridge, CBS? D.N.I. Radcliffe. He's giving a little foreshadowing of what potentially is in the draft that they're working on. I'm reading between the tea leaves, and I'm thinking there's some China. There's a little bit of China in there. Am I wrong?
Oh, that's great.
Sunday morning futures, and then is a CBS interview. So that's what I'm reading. It's there for everyone to see. I mean, do your own research, DYOR. I get it. I mean, everybody's busy. I'm just trying to kind of compact it, but also be substantive about it. So that executive order directs the DNI to come up with that assessment. That assessment is going to be, published to those four, potentially five people. Notice who's missing there. Just keep that in mind. Four people. Now, what happens after that? Well, this is what's happened next. Every single person that's listening needs to contact Senator Rubio, Senator Cotton, and everybody else on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence to call, especially the chairman, the acting chairman, Senator Rubio from Florida, and say, you know what? We the people want to hear what is in that assessment. We deserve it. We demand it because we want to know if China messed with our elections, not only in those six states, but in the state that I live in too. Get on it. And you know what? I want that. I want that on December 22nd because the 18th is a Friday. I want that somewhere in the December 22nd, 20. Actually, you know what? I want it before the states have to certify so that the state legislators, before the vice president demands that they send their electoral slate, I want my state legislators to hear that as well. So let's do it on the 22nd. It gives you the weekend to wrap it up and declassify it to make sure that the whole country hears about it. So let's do that. December 22nd, Senator Marco Rubio calls what? Actually, you know what? Because it's such grave importance, it needs to be a joint session in the Senate because the Senate has a responsibility for foreign relations constitutionally. And then he invites over our good friend, Congressman Devin Nunes, for the joint component of it so that the House has a vested interest in a voice and asking its relevant questions in the event that there's a contingent vote, since he is essentially representing Devin Nunes, the expected majority of states that will vote for a president, since it's a majority Republican slate. See where I'm going?
Mm-hmm.
And he's the ranking member on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Now, who are they going to have as witnesses to testify before their hearing? Obviously, the Director of National Intelligence. That's one. Let's look at the other ones. Dominion Systems CEO should probably be testifying to get everything he needs to get out so that America sees, from the CEO's perspective, everything's kosher. If it's not kosher, it's going to come out. And you know what? Because of all the shenanigans going on in Georgia, we the people demand that Governor Kemp testify. Why? He used to be the Secretary of State of Georgia before the current Secretary of State. So we need to get a little bit of context of foreign interaction specifically as it applies to Georgia. Why? Because there's a lot of information out there of China back and forth and deals being done between the governor, potentially the Secretary of State, Dominion. There's just this cloud that needs to be answered and addressed for whoever the president ends up being, we the people, and even more importantly, the state legislators need to know that they're making the right call with all full knowledge of potential foreign interference so that they don't look like fools on December 23rd to either change what they've already sent because they didn't know this data or to send in an electoral slate that's commensurate with what what it should be, factoring in the foreign interference. All right, I'll stop there.
Oh, no, it's perfect. So you've got – I'm sorry?
Is that new or is that old info?
Oh, no, no, no. So, again, don't forget, most people who have been reading everything they possibly can, such as me, are still learning brand new things every day, and especially during this particular interview.
Every day, too. I'm just trying to contextualize it.
Well, that's the whole idea, is that people have to have an understanding, because here's the thing. You've got mainstream media, you've got big tech, you've got Democrats all echoing the same concept of President-elect Biden, the same idea that he's already a done deal. This is them trying to
it's non-information. It's disinformation.
Exactly.
I don't factor that into my analysis.
They're doing what's called assuming the sale. And it's important for people to understand.
I will say something on that.
Please.
The reason why they're doing it is because, as I mentioned at the very beginning, Biden's only path to victory is Trump conceding.
Right. And so that's why they're pushing.
If you use all your assets to convince, hey, I'm going to do this magic, you're not going to win. You're not going to win. You're not going to win. Meanwhile, the law and the facts and the people are all on your side, saying that there's no chance that Biden wins. And you don't know that because you're clouded with all this information of, oh, Biden's going to win. Then you're like, you're second guessing yourself. And that's why I'm trying to get out in front to let the grassroots, the legislators, the Congress members that, most people don't know that you know a lot more than most of the Congress members in there because you've done your due diligence and research. I mean, I'm honest because they have different roles and responsibilities on different committees. And people like us needs to step up and tell them, hey, you better follow the Constitution. You better follow Title III of the U.S. Code. And when you present it to them, they look at it and say, oh, this is great. Now I have not only hope, I see guaranteed victory. Now we just need to execute on it. But if you don't know what you're supposed to do that you want to do, you can't execute on it. You're just presenting something that they want to do, but they don't know that they can do it.
When it's important that we do, you keep bringing up that the grassroots has to get involved. We have to call. You mentioned in your plan multiple times there needs to be huge rallies, not just in D.C., but in the 8 cities that are currently contested. Yeah. This is important because they need to know, they being the legislators specifically, they need to know that because they're going to get threats, they're going to get bullied, they're going to be told they're crazy, they're going to be called every possible name by the press. They need to know that the people actually do know. And that we understand and we have their back.
If you want to call it press, you're the press.
Exactly.
This right here is much more relevant. And I hate to say it, I'm irrelevant. My analysis of the law and the facts is what's important. If no one knows my name, I could care less. But the content that we're providing you, that's specifically important because that's what's going to play out.
Absolutely. Right, and his name, last, just got to throw it out there for those who don't know. His name is Ivan Raiklin. You can find him on Twitter at R-A-I-K-L-I-N. And I suggest that you follow him. Check out his full plan on there. Ivan, carry on.
Pinned, right? I think I pinned it.
Yeah, it's somewhere. I think it is. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I found it. Excellent. I can't.
So, yeah. December 20. Okay, we talked about the hearing. Senator Rubio. And the reason why I mentioned Senator Cotton also by name is that he's in a very good position to really contextualize this and articulate because of his experience in the military as a member of the military on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. And obviously you can kind of tell he's probably a little bit more in line with the current president than maybe Senator Rubio. But I will say this, Senator Rubio, last Friday, I believe it was, put out a joint statement with the vice chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, Senator Mark Warner from Virginia, that also gave an indication that China's eating our lunch and is about to eat our breakfast, lunch, and dinner the following day and throughout the rest of eternity if we don't do anything about it. Okay? So just want to put that out there again for context. All right, so December 23rd. That gives a day or two, depending on when the hearing is, for these state legislatures to make a determination, right? So that's kind of another path that could change the dynamics of all 6 of these states and maybe even more, right? Depending on how things played out.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this may change the dynamic alongside all these lawsuits going on. That testimony could require or motivate the states, the people in the states, to further investigate their elections. And we may see Senator John James from Michigan come out of it.
That would be nice.
We may see Senator Martha McSally come out of this from Arizona. We may see Senator Perdue, over 50% of the vote from Georgia, come out of this. What is that? That looks like 53 Republican senators right there. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Which begs the question, should we wait until the presidential election is over before we have a U.S. Senate runoff in Georgia?
Yep.
Until we figure this thing out. And while we're figuring these out, Senator Perdue and Senator Loeffler are on January 6th in the U.S. Senate participating in a potential contingent election? Or do we want them to sit it out? Or even to have potentially the others that may somehow steal the election, the Warnock and what's the other person? The other candidate.
Ossoff.
Yeah. Those guys. Right? Are you following there?
I am.
What does that mean? That means someone probably needs to file in the Georgia courts based on the Constitution of Georgia. I know it says that a runoff election is the equivalent of, now I'll even read it just because I want to be accurate about it. Now, if I do that, I think I'll shut this off. Let me do it over here. Okay. Let's take a look at this.
While you're looking that up, I do want to.
Go ahead. So the Georgia Constitution basically, I'll just do it in layman's.
Please.
It says that the runoff election is an extension of the general election, and specifically, only those people that voted in the general can vote in the runoff. Well, if we don't even know who legally voted in the general election, how the hell are we supposed to do a runoff? You can't. Let's resolve that first. Potentially provide a determination on Senator Perdue. And then second piece is let's see where it falls after the presidential election. And then we may have to have one or maybe two U.S. Senate the runoff after we figure out and settle all the fraud, who voted legally and illegally, have that list so that we don't have Andrew Yang and AOC residents of Georgia voting that didn't vote in the general election. Like that?
I wholeheartedly agree, my friend. That is.
I think that lawsuit's, if I was a betting man, that lawsuit is imminent.
It is. We already had we did have the lawsuit today. I want to toss out because I think a lot of people are asking. As I've said multiple times with every lawsuit, when you get a decision from a district judge, whether it's today, you had Sidney Powell who had two of her lawsuits tossed. It doesn't matter what happens at the district level. That just makes it harder for them to win at the appellate level. And at the appellate level, from there, it goes on to the state Supreme Court or the Supreme Court. The only one that matters is the final ruling. You could have two. She could get dismissed twice and take it to the Supreme Court and win.
You're right, but there's way more to it if you allow me.
Please. No. I was hoping you'd discuss it. Go.
Okay. So when you file a lawsuit, it only starts that process of looking into things, right? And when you file a lawsuit on a matter where like other people may be involved and implicated, and you start filing lots and lots of lawsuits, you can never file enough lawsuits, right? So that means that if you're somehow involved in what is being alleged and you're thinking, you know what? They're probably on to me. I may want to cop a deal here, or I may want to do something that's going to then create more evidence for then us to follow because you're getting sloppy, right?
Right.
Lawsuits in and of themselves make people that are, have done something wrong, do something that then creates indicators of it for us then to follow the crumbs. A large component of these lawsuits, in my estimation, is specifically for that. Because look at, and then while you have pending litigation, you can start researching. You can request the court to, hey, can, like in Nevada, can we request the DMV to provide us data on how old these people are if they were old enough? I mean, I don't think they granted that, but these are the things that you can start getting. It's not full discovery like a criminal or a criminal case, but it's still, I mean, you get opportunities to investigate in areas where you couldn't access before, but the court allows you to. So now it broadens that path, because at the end of the day, in a civil law, these are civil lawsuits. It's essentially, you know, company A is going to the court because company B violated a contractual agreement.
Right.
And you really don't have any authority other than asking people, hey, did you see anything nefarious? And people have to come forward. So the more this goes on and the more it's in the media limelight, people are like, you know what? I actually did see something that was, you know, on election night, or like, I do have a picture. And like, I thought it was weird. I didn't think anything of it. But now that I know the contextual of what's going on with the selection, yeah, that's way off. And so then you have these organizations that are bringing these witnesses forward on, you know, with sworn affidavits. That's why they have so many affidavits. You know, it takes time.
Why don't you speak to that? Because I think a lot of people, I see this a lot on Twitter. Okay, they equate this to criminal case and evidence beyond reasonable doubt versus in a civil case where there's a preponderance of evidence. Can you explain that in layman's terms? Why we don't need to get, you know, to 99% sure. We got to get to 51%.
So we use this as an example. So there's different burdens of proof. Everyone's heard, you know, some people have heard reasonable suspicion to search for search and seizure and all these terms for civil case. Preponderance of the evidence. What does that mean? So you only have to show the court, the judge, that your evidence and the defendant's evidence, whoever has 50%, 0.00 repeating one, that kind of like makes you lean in that favor, that's the person that wins the case. So that's preponderance of the evidence. I present to you, hey, this is the fraud we allege, and these are the 50 or 100 or the 300 people that agree with that allegation, that are actually telling you and swearing on, in an affidavit saying, you know what, I'm telling the truth, and if at some point you find out that I'm lying, now I'm subject to being jailed because I just lied to the court. Or you can just go to the other side, which has defense attorneys, and they say, you know what? This case, it shouldn't be in this court. They filed too late. You know what? You shouldn't believe them. That's the counter argument. So then what do you do? It's kind of compelling here. But then what do you do if you're a judge appointed by a Democrat executive or a liberal judge? You're in a dilemma. You try and figure out a way to articulate using the law and say, you know what? Yeah, I think I agree. This should have been filed earlier. You can't really do it at this point for the following reasons. I mean, you would have won the case if you filed earlier, but sorry, you didn't file it in time. That's what's going on. Mm-hmm. That's how they're being dismissed. And then you go, and the other point I'll make is, okay, Sidney Powell, I consider her the best. She's going to go down as the best attorney that we have had in this country.
Wow.
That's from my opinion. Just phenomenal. Fearless. Aggressive. Just watch. Just let this play out. If you're going to bet against her, it's kind of like Elon Musk. You want to bet against Elon Musk? Have at it. You're going to lose. Same thing with Sidney. Have at it. You're going to lose. All right. With that said, and you go into appellate, you go to the appeal. So the case is still open if you appeal. What does that do? The people that still may be involved in that orbit of that case are like, oh, what do I do? Should I hide out? Should I do something? Or should I kind of step forward and try to get, you know, protect myself. Investigations still continue. So it opens up for potential more evidence of fraud. So that's what's going on. So yeah, I get it. Dismissed. Is it the ideal situation? No. Is it still a win? Yes. Filing the case is a win. And then everything else on top of that is cherry on top. Why? Because it provides all this evidence that's going to be used later, if necessary, on January 6th to make that argument to object all the states. Okay, you want to get to that? Wait, so before we go to that in detail, we stopped on December 23rd, right?
Right.
All right. I'm not ruthless. My plan allows for family time. So celebrate Christmas. Talk about that Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. You know, spend time with family. Enjoy it. Celebrate your new year. Keep talking about that Senate Select Committee on Intelligence hearing with, oh, I didn't finish the witnesses, did I? DNI. Let's see here. Who did I mention before? The Dominion. Yeah, Dominion CEO. And you know what? The governor, the Secretary of State, and for good measure, you may want to consider the Attorney General down there, and you may want to consider the lobbyist that works for one of those executives that is the used to work for Dominion, and he's kind of like the liaison between Dominion and the Secretary of State. If I was recommending to we the people, you guys, on who you should recommend that Marco Rubio, Senator Rubio, calls as a witness, those would be first on my list. If you come up with others, please DM me. Okay. January 1st, new year, we rein it in. 2021, hopefully, it's going to be way better than this year. I know it's been brutal for a lot of folks. Let's look at this new year. All right. What happens first? January 3rd of 2021. At noon, the 117th, and I mean, I'm doing this from memory, so I don't even know where my slide is. January 3rd at noon, 117th Congress sits and gets sworn in, okay? The way I'm looking at it right now, last I looked was it 222 Democrats and 210 Republicans, and there are still three seats yet to be determined, okay? Which is, I think it's right now we're at a 10-seat pickup for the Republicans.
Yeah, I think it's actually more than I thought they were up to 13 now.
Was it? Yeah, I'm not following that yet closely because I'll follow it closer as we get towards once we get closer to January 6th. But here's what we should expect. January 3rd, they swear in. They got to do all their administrivia, the administrative piece, you know, with their families if they can. I don't know. It's based on the China plague conditions. I don't know how they're going to run it. It is. After all, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is, I think, technically still in play until they have the vote that day, and she's going to decide the rules, so we'll see. But then, January 4th, we don't have to worry about what's going on with the House Speaker. You know why? Because we're going to have another hearing on January 4th that could potentially go into the 5th and into the 6th. What is that hearing? Senate Judiciary Committee hearing. So over the holidays, you should be contacting everyone you know that knows anyone on the Senate Judiciary Committee and on the Senate Homeland, I think it's called the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. So chairman of that is Senator Graham, Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. And Homeland Security is Senator Ron Johnson. From Wisconsin. Keep that in mind. Okay. So why is this important? Well, I put out on a previous tweet, and again, I'm going to recycle some of these as it gets closer when we need to mobilize as we the people. So the Judiciary Committee has oversight responsibilities over the Department of Justice, the FBI by extension, and everything involved with the Department of Justice. Well, what components of the Department of Justice are important in investigating and determining in its oversight responsibility in Congress to know, do we have all the information we need in order to make a legitimate decision on January 6th to determine whether we're going to accept or not accept electors from these states? Well, let's look into it. This is what we're going to look into as the Judiciary Committee. One, we're going to talk to the U.S. attorneys in the eight cities that are in contest. Two, we're going to talk to the special agents in charge if they're investigating anything going on in those eight cities. Three, we're going to talk to the election district officers that work for the Department of Justice and get anything, any relevant material that we need to see if there's any evidence of criminal fraud that has been going on as it applies to these elections. That's number three. Let's see here. That's it. Right? So that's a lot of people. So who do we have to testify? Well, I think the Attorney General is appropriate to lay things out. The FBI director is kind of appropriate, right? And then all the people I just mentioned. So that may be a three-day hearing or two and a half. You tracking?
Absolutely.
Is that brilliant?
It is. And so, and people, you have to alert Lindsey Graham. You also have Ted Cruz. You've got Tom Cotton. You have a lot of very...
Tom Cotton's not on that committee. So, yeah.
Oh, Tom Cotton's not. Who am I thinking of then?
I have him listed in the timeline.
Oh, Hawley. I get Cotton and Hawley.
Josh Hawley.
Yeah.
Josh Hawley is critical in this.
Yes.
I think he's going to come out as the rock star in this entire thing. And the number two is going to be Ron Johnson. But we're going to get to that. So, why? Senator Hawley sits on both the Judiciary Committee and the Homeland Security Committee. He's the only one that does on both of those committees. And again, this is what's going to happen the 48 hours prior to the Electoral College vote. And it's going to come to that crescendo on the 5th and into the 6th, just before 1 p.m. when the Electoral College comes together. So all conservative media is going to be talking about not only all the stuff that we just talked about before and all the lawsuits that Sydney's coming and filing and everything that she's uncovered, but now they're going to be forced to, they being the Department of Justice, is going to essentially have to say, here's what we have, that what we've been doing. Because now they have to report to the committee that oversees them in a public forum to answer to the people if they've been doing anything. Right? Senator Lindsey Graham, chairman. Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, Senator Grassley, Senator from Louisiana, Kennedy. I think those are going to be the heavy hitters. Those are going to be the heavy hitters on that committee. Okay? Now, no one on that committee is a senator from any of the contested states. So there's that impartiality, right? They're not really the ones that are involved in looking at that state. They're looking at it from the outside into another state. I think it lends even more credibility, but with that dynamic,
sure,
in my opinion. All right, so that's the Judiciary. The next day, because you know during the holidays, this is all you've been doing, is reaching out to you. Oh, by the way, all these hearings are joint. So the first one we talked about, Devin Nunes. Now we're going to have the ranking member of the Judiciary, which is Jim Jordan, as a representative of Congress in the framework of him being the senior Judiciary member representing the 50 state delegations, right? Being the chairman. It's not Nadler. Nadler is going to be one of our witnesses. Okay?
That would be nice.
So let's talk about the witness. So, again, Jim Jordan, and you can look at the list on my timeline of who's all in there, right? And you can look at the entire committee to see who's who. But I listed the key players that I think that are going to really articulate the case for America and ask the right questions based on their past performance of really opening things up and disclosing any criminal fraud that occurred to help in that decision on January 6th. All right, last committee. Senator Ron Johnson, Wisconsin, chairs the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. He is, and along with Josh Hawley. So Josh is going to have, Senator Hawley is going to, I don't know him. I just said that. Never talked to him, just for full disclosure.
Joshy
I hope to talk to him in the future, but I think he's brilliant. And the reason why he should be the number one advocate starting, let's say, he should be watching this right now. So in a few minutes, he should be making a statement because he's watching us, right? And essentially saying, because I am a former attorney general from a state, I'm very, very well versed in the law, even more so than Ivan Raiklin. And because I sit on both the judiciary and the Homeland Security Committee, I'm going to scrutinize absolutely everything that goes on. So I'm going to know what's going on in the DOJ holistically, as we just discussed, and not more importantly, in addition to all of that, this election was fully, like a lot of the fraud stemmed from the mail-in ballots. Who provides mail-in ballots?
China. I'm just kidding.
The U.S. Postal Service. Who has oversight over the U.S. Postal Service? Which committee? Yes.
Homeland Security?
The Homeland Security Committee. Boom! So, let's have for witnesses. Who would you think? Postmaster General? He may have been looking into some fraud, right? Let the country see it. What about the postmasters from the 8 cities that are in dispute? Under oath. Under oath. You see any fraud in your little areas? Under oath? Okay. Let's see what's there. It's going to be good.
It's going to be fantastic.
So all of that, the foreign interference.
Which there was a question. Could you?
The civil investigations and the Postal Service, the Inspector General from the Postal Service, is going to create that framework to then help the House and Senate decide, if necessary, who to vote for and determine which states have legitimate electors that were elected that didn't have any of this fraud. That's why Mo Brooks and 2 other congressmen already have pledged that, you know what? I've been talking to one of them. Actually, 2, they already committed to denying, or I should say, not denying, the operative word is objecting to the 6 states that are in contest. They're going to object allowing those states to count in the Electoral College vote. And before I move on and give specifics on how that process works, you got a question.
Well, it was just a recap. I know that one of...
Yeah, I'm excited. I love this stuff.
I know. It gets me excited, too. I know that one of the people that you're referring to in the House who I had noticed, I've actually interviewed her on the show before, is Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yes, that's who I've been talking to.
Yeah, she is going to object. Say again.
She's a rock star.
She is a rock star. She is rising.
She is part of Saving Georgia.
She will.
Instrumentally.
She will participate, and she will have a major role in it. It's been a bit. There was my goodness. So somebody had asked, and you've already covered it, but just give a 30-second to a minute overview once again of Executive Order 13848 from 2018 regarding. Yep. Somebody asked. Oh yeah, they just came in again. That's exactly. The Heineken man asked. That's exactly what
foreign domestic interference with the elections. Yeah. I mean, whoever was planning this is brilliant, right? 45 days after the election lands on December 18th. That's 19. And it's a Friday. And on the 23rd, under the Title III of Section 15 of Title III, is when the vice president demands the states, if they haven't submitted their electoral votes yet, to send them. So then we can have a hearing in between the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Joint hearing between SISI and HPSI with the senior members of both houses. Again, using not the Speaker of the House construct, but using the constitutional electoral college framework if it goes to a contingent election, which means Devin Nunes.
Right.
And then same thing with, we talked about judiciary. I forgot to mention that. Judiciary. So Jim Jordan, and then on the other side, I think it's Rogers, if I'm not mistaken, Mike Rogers, I believe, is the senior ranking member on the Homeland Security Committee in the House. So make sure you reach out to him. Let him know that we need, again, we the people are going to force this plan on them, right? They don't know yet that this is the plan. We are going to force it on them, because who doesn't want transparency? Who doesn't want to make sure that this was completely above board this entire election?
Democrats.
I mean, I think some of them want it.
Oh, for sure. The P. I'm talking about Democrat lawmakers. I'm talking about mainstream media, big tech. They don't want it because they're complicit.
Thank you for mentioning big tech. The other reason why it's going to be a 3-day hearing before the judiciary is because we're going to have not only all those witnesses, but we're also going to have Sundar Pichai, again, as it relates to this election, because we haven't interviewed him since before the election, right? Sundar Pichai, I mean, you know the list. Jack Dorsey, come on. You got to throw in Mark Zuckerberg. Who else you got to throw in there? I don't know. You tell me.
So
maybe, I don't know, maybe a little Tim Cook. Sprinkle a little Tim Cook in there, and maybe a little bit of Jeff Bezos. I don't know. If we have time. I mean, we may not have time, right? Okay. And then on the Homeland Security Committee, I think the Postal Service, if I think of some more, I just think that's more than enough than what we need. It's really on point. It really flexes the entire federal government to really scrutinize what the states just did in their election. That's the intent there. It's the check by the federal government on the states to make sure that they applied all that, like we have all the information we need before we lock in on who we're voting for president and vice president. Okay. I'll stop there.
No, it's the perfect place to stop. I'm going to give the audiences.
Let's talk about the Electoral College vote.
Well, let's talk about the Electoral College vote.
All right, so. Hearings are complete. Your Hannity's, your Fox, your OAN, your Newsmax, all your conservative influencers online are talking about all these hearings. They're like, it's a no-brainer. There's no way they're voting for Biden. It's impossible. Your never-Trumpers are like, man, yeah, I'm going to have to vote for Trump because I'm going to get destroyed because of all this public information clearly in showing. I mean, now it's not like, oh, it's been debunked. Oh, is this? No. The next month is going to educate the entire country how fraudulent this election was. And we're going to see it. And at that point in time, if you're voting to allow these states to send the slate of electors that they're currently supposed to send, that's just wrong. I mean, I don't care who you are. That's just wrong. And so how does it work? This is how the vote works. What's the first state by alphabetical order? Oh, so let me set the stage. So in the House of Representatives chamber is a joint session. The Senate comes over to the House, inside of the House chambers. The presiding officer is the vice president, as in his capacity as the president of the Senate. He presides over the Electoral College vote at 1 p.m. at January 6th, right? And then he calls the roll. All right, what's the first state? Alaska, I think, or something in alphabetical order. Let's just say Alaska. All right, any objections? I don't think so. You know why? Because Alaska has a Republican legislature, House and Senate, and it has a Republican governor, and the popular vote, legal, uncontested, was for Donald Trump. Okay, let's move on. No objections. Next. Blah, 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 blah. Arizona, objection, Vice President, or excuse me, President of the Senate. Yes, Congressman Mo Brooks. What is your objection? I object to the, and then he's going to go into it. I object. Oh, wait, no. Sorry. It's not going to be that way, Congressman. The law stipulates, the Constitution stipulates that you're going to have to submit in writing. And oh, by the way, who is the senator that's going to join you in that objection? Because we need a senator, the Constitution requires it. Well, as the senator from Missouri, Senator Hawley, having the best context on what's going on with this entire fraud, as a former attorney general of the state of Missouri, knowing the law of the state and the Constitution, and also having sat through the hearings on the Homeland Security and the Judiciary Committee, I object vehemently for the state of Arizona to submit its electoral votes to this body, this joint session of Congress, for the following 84 reasons. But he, by the way, he does that in writing because it's required. So the way you do it, so the objection occurs, the Senate goes to their chamber, the House votes, stays in their chamber, and then each one of them votes for Arizona. And in this case, we could have, at a minimum, 52 senators, Republican, 48, or we could have 54. John James, McSally, we shall see. We shall see. So 50, and it's required to have 51 senators vote in that instance for president, vice president for that particular state. Then they go back to the House, and they do that with every other state. Okay? What's the next state? Georgia. I object. Okay. Senate, break off. Do your vote. House, do your vote. Come back. Now, how does the – oh, I didn't mention. We talked about how the Senate, the threshold to vote on how they're going to vote is 51. The House, we kind of talked about it earlier, it doesn't vote. This doesn't get 435 votes, according to each of the individual congressmen. They vote by congressional delegation. So in the I'll give you an example. In the instance of Alabama, because Alabama is this, Mo Brooks is from Alabama. So you got seven Congress, they go and vote, each state, all the 50 states. By the way, in this, it's called the contingent election when they do it this way. The 50 states break out into their little areas on the House floor or wherever they want to do it. And by the way, District of Columbia does not vote when it's a contingent election. It's only the 50 states. So then Alabama, let's listen in on the Alabama corner. All right, let's see here. Seven Republicans, one Democrat. All right, guys, how do you guys want to vote? Who are you going to vote for? I mean, look at this evidence. They objected. Yeah, we're not accepting that slate of electors. Is it going to be 7-1? Okay, so then 7-1 to me means the state of Alabama votes for President Donald J. Trump for 4 more years and Vice President Mike Pence. And then they go through the rest of the states. Oh, excuse me. I missed. That is not correct. They can either accept or deny that slate. Okay? So they'll say, they don't vote for the president. They'll just say, we deny that slate of electors from that state. And then the denominator gets lower, right? The denominator stays the same, right?
The numerator goes below 270.
The numerator goes below. And if you don't get 270,
right,
then we just then it goes to that next vote. So anyway, we go through it with the six. They deny all six of those states the ability to seat their electors, and so now we're at what, 232 to 227, right? But the thing is, it's 232 to 227, but 538%. That's when you go to that vote.
Right.
And then 28 states vote for Trump. And so, 52, maybe 54 senators vote for Pence. Because the Senate votes for the vice president and the House votes for the president.
There
is no path to victory for Biden. There is none. If we get involved and educate people, that's it. January 6th, celebrate. Maybe January 7th, maybe they want to delay, whatever. And then January 20th at noon, expect a nice, beautiful inauguration.
with a lot of progressive people screaming no. They will not be having a good day.
They're going to be angry.
Oh yeah,
it's going to be hurtful.
It's going to be burning in the streets.
More painful than the first one, but I'm sorry. I swore to defend the Constitution. I have to, and I apologize that I had to do that.
That is the first oath as Americans. So to recap, there are between. We've got the state legislatures. We have the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
We have the committees.
Yeah.
On Capitol Hill, and we have the. Senators or the senators and House members themselves.
So we have four election, we call it. Yep.
Four separate paths through which to either get President Trump over 270, get Joe Biden under 270, or potentially call the vote themselves and be able to. Either way, you know, whatever combination of, because I mean, it could, and it doesn't have to be one or the other. In other words, you could have the Supreme Court strike down and say Pennsylvania. Your electors are gone.
It's basically primary legislature. He could win in the primary option, alternate option. And if he doesn't win in the alternate, then we go to contingency. If he doesn't win in the contingency, then in the emergency situation, it's not really emergency. It's already happened three times. So we've had 45 presidents. This would be the fourth time it's happened.
Right.
Of 45 presidents.
Yeah, so you won't hear that on mainstream media.
Again, the fourth time this will happen where it would have to go to contingent vote in the joint session in the House, you know, on January 6th.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, 8% of the time it happens.
It's good math. The Joe Biden, you know, for him to win, basically everything has to fall apart. People keep asking me all the time on these shows, you know, it seems so bad. Well, if it seems so bad, it's because you're not paying attention or you're paying attention to the wrong people. That's not to say that it's going to be easy. It's going to take work. But we have one extremely important thing on our side. We have the truth. Yes. And we have the Constitution.
I would disagree with you that it's hard. I mean, the people that heard this, like I'm talking to the right player. Like all these people that are listed there, from grassroots all the way up, I'm talking to them. Mm-hmm. I was on the phone call with a brand new member of the Freedom Caucus today, briefing him. He said, oh my gosh, you need to brief the Freedom Caucus on this plan. And I said, what time tonight? You want to do it? We can do it tomorrow. We can do it the next day. So for those that are listening in feeling like it's hopeless, like I'm doing as much as I can. And I think with the entire, there's a lot of people working on this. I'm only doing my small part because I'm only doing it primarily like evenings and, you know, before, yeah, I still work. So before work and during lunch and evening, I'm having a massive impact, I feel, with getting the word out and the analysis that I'm able to provide. So
we will keep pushing these out to the right people. And I will continue to send this out.
Reach out to the state legislators. Reach out to these committee members. That's massive. You're shaping the environment to make sure that the ultimate end state happens. And we have 30 days. I mean, it's 30 days. It's plenty of time.
Reach out to who you need to, but also make sure to, guys, make sure that you're telling everybody else, people that you know, okay? You go to Christmas parties or you're stuck in lockdown and you're on a Zoom Christmas party or you're talking to your friends or family or relatives or you're on Twitter. Just get the word out because right now there's too many people who are buying into the mainstream media and big tech narrative and Democrats' narrative that's sent down from on high that says, it's over. You know, we've had these a couple of trolls. I love that they spend so much time listening to this stuff, and then the entire time, the way that they troll is saying, "You guys lost."
So Jesse Banal, who's the campaign? So Jesse Banal is our lead attorney in Nevada for the Nevada case. By the way, the reason why Nevada is still hopeful is because it's a 4-3 court in our favor,
right?
Even though the legislature is Democrat. But anyway, he puts out a tweet saying, don't feed the trolls. And then somebody says something else. And then General Flynn chimes in and says, oh, she says, they're everywhere. They're all around us. And General responds with, just where we want. The trolls are 360 degrees around us. And I always say that. The enemy is 360 degrees around us. That's the perfect position to be in. That's when I like to fight and participate. Wait, did I lose you?
No, I made myself get lost. I was just totally agreeing with you. Yes, we do need to address the trolls exactly like that. Keep them close, okay? People like these trolls that we've got, listen, they can scream and cry all they want about how we lost and get over it and this stuff, but they're the ones that just heard an hour and a half worth of truth dictated to them. Now, are they affected? Probably not. They're probably just not going to take any of it to heart, but some of them will.
Well,
I've actually had many of them reach out to me in the past recently that says, look, you know, I know that I was pretty rude to you, but can we actually talk this through on DM? Because I'm kind of hearing what you're saying. I kind of agree. That happens every day. That's why I keep open DMs. And I know that Ivan keeps open DMs as well.
Yeah.
You guys have questions, call us. You guys have access to Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, Doug Mastriano, Sidney Powell.
Tag
them on Twitter. Get the word out. They've got to see this plan, and they've got to take it and run with it.
And people are like, oh, why aren't they doing anything? Why aren't they doing anything? I mean, we're all busy. They may not know. And if everybody in their network is like, hey, man, I'm getting hit up by 1,000 people telling me that I need to do this, and then they tell their inner circle, and then they're like, you know what, let me look into this. Because the people that are around them that are trusted, that are getting the demand signal, is going to force them to do it and research it
right
in a timely way. And that's why I set out the plan. It's got to be, you know, the timing and sequencing has to be on point. So I think now that I did this and now that I put the plan out there, and then with all the people out there from the Trump campaign team, lawyers, I mean, they're on cruise control. These things are going. Don't get me wrong. They're working. They're hustling. But we're on a glide path for victory on that side. We're doing all a massive effort. Same thing with the Team Sydney and Linwood. By the way, tomorrow there's going to be a hearing in Arizona. Sydney's doing a hearing for Arizona. So stay tuned for that. And then, yeah, that's about it. And I always got to end it with this, right? If you think my stuff's good, drop a penny so I can keep the lights on.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah. You got your. So, yeah, go to his Twitter account.
PayPal in there. I mean,
you got your PayPal.
Some people give like $5 or whatever. I mean,
yeah, give him 10.
Get my kids some Chipotle. You know?
We could all use more Chipotle, even though out here in California, I still have to order it to have it brought to me, thanks to you. But that's a whole other issue. We'll have you on to discuss that stuff from a constitutional perspective later. Ivan, hey, it has been a.
A lot of us patriots don't get to see people like you. All they get to see is the fake news, but there's a lot of patriots out there that know this was a fraud. Gotcha. Hey, thanks, guys. No, thank me. I mean, you guys stuck with me the whole time, so thank you. I mean, that's literally another 100, 200 and some people that hopefully learned a little bit more, but it sounds like if they're listening to you, you're already on it, man.
Well, we just
fine-tune it a little bit.
Keep in mind that's, you know, the live viewership through Restream is never the actual number. This actually, by this time all is said and done, assuming that it doesn't go viral, if it goes viral, there's no telling. President Trump has retweeted one of my podcasts before. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. Lynn Wood has very recently. But even without that, this is going to reach tens of thousands of people. And that's the beauty of this.
Hundreds.
That's the beauty of this medium. Hopefully it's hundreds. I'm hoping for hundreds of thousands. 300. We're going to shoot for 300,000. And if we get to 300,000, I will go to your PayPal and I will drop $10 in. I promise you that. Ivan, it has been an honor and a pleasure. I want to have you on very soon once again. Because, you know, again, this is going to how things progress after tomorrow. Tomorrow is a big day. Okay. What happens with Justice Alito? What happens with Pennsylvania? Could change the calculus, or it could send us straight down the pathway that you have laid out in your plan. So everybody check out. Yeah, go to twitter.com.
If we lose in the Supreme Court, okay. We still have four other paths.
There are paths available. Yes, and we're not even going to, for those who didn't hear it earlier, we're not even going to mention that fifth path until the first four are exhausted, because it's the not nearly as fun as the first three paths.
Right.
but Ivan, again, I appreciate you. I will hit you up on Twitter and let's talk further about this. Hopefully this week, depending on how things go. Lord willing, we will be back for another episode very soon. But in the meantime, you guys stay strong, stay safe, and God bless.